I'm Les Sinclair. Thank you very much for having us here on your radio. This is the afternoon news magazine show that goes beyond the headlines, digging deeper into the stories that matter to you. This story matters because it involves a FOIA request. At least I'm assuming that it's a FOIA request. It seems like a pretty basic thing, but Jeff Fogel is a local attorney. He's representing both the NAACP and the Public Housing Association of Residents. And filed a lawsuit against the city over the refusal to release Charlottesville police stop and frisk records. Jeff Fogel, thanks for being on. Can you give us a little bit of backstory here? What precipitated this lawsuit?
Well, in June of 2012, the police chief agreed to keep records of stops and frisks on the street. This was at the urging of community members. He then, 2 years later, gave a report to the city council on the outcome of those reports. And those reports included a requirement that each officer who stops and frisks somebody on the street write a report explaining the reasons why he or she had stopped the person and the reason why he or she had frisked the person. Those records reveal, at least his statistics, revealed that 70% of the stops and frisks were of African Americans, and only 29 were of white people. Now, that's a pretty strong statistic when you consider that only 19% of the residents of Charlottesville are African American. And what is also considerably significant is that of all the stops that occurred during that period of time, only about 12% revealed any criminal activity. So if you took stops all the time, only about 12% are the police correct in their assumption that somebody is engaging in criminal activity. And most of those ones that revealed so-called criminal activity included things like trespassing or an open container and things like that. So of serious offenses, we're talking a very small percentage of stops and frisks in Charlottesville result in any police action beyond the actual stop and frisk. Now, that puts all citizens at risk of potentially arbitrary police stops. And I can tell you, having experienced it myself, that being stopped and frisked on the street by a police officer can be an embarrassing experience, it can be a degrading experience, and it could be a humiliating experience. And when it's predominantly done in particular neighborhoods of people of a particular race, then it seems to me, and it seems to many people, that something, if I can quote Shakespeare, is rotten in Charlottesville.
This is 1070 WINA. We're talking with attorney Jeff Fogel about the stop and frisk policy in the city of Charlottesville. Now, correct me if I'm wrong, but haven't stop and frisks been called into question under Fourth Amendment rights in other parts of the country?
Well, yes, but some things are very clear. The Supreme Court decided a case when I was in law school in 1968 that was very specific and said police officers can stop and conduct a short-time detention if they have reasonable, articulable suspicion that the person is engaged in criminal activity. Can't just be a hunch. They have to be able to articulate specific facts that lead them to that reasonable suspicion. It's not probable cause, which is what they need to arrest somebody, but it's reasonable suspicion. And then if they stop somebody to question them about information that they may have that leads them to conclude that there may be a crime involved, they also have to have further reasonable, articulable suspicion that the person is armed and dangerous before they can conduct a frisk. And that's been the law since 1968. The police department knows that. The police chief's directives, which I've read to the officers, state that. So there's no problem with the policy. The problem is with the practice.
So what are you hoping to find with the information that comes out in this that you're trying to obtain?
Well, each of these narratives is supposed to explain why the person was being stopped and the circumstances of the stop and the frisk. There's no way to determine whether the quality of those stops, that is to say, there's no way to determine whether or not police officers are acting consistent with Charlottesville Police Department policy and constitutional law without looking at the reasons why they're stopping people, what information they're relying on to make that determination. And there's certainly no basis to determine whether or not there is racial profiling at issue without looking at that very document which states the reason why people are being stopped and the source of information, not the name, because we agreed that we would accept this information with no names. So nobody's going to be embarrassed by this, except maybe the police department if they haven't been doing their job. But no officer's name will appear there, no name of the person being stopped, no name of the person who may have provided information, no witnesses' names, nothing like that. There is no attempt here to violate anybody's personnel records, anybody's privacy rights, just to look at the conduct of the police department when they exercise the authority that we give them, which is a very serious authority to stop people and to arrest people. And we certainly all should be concerned that that's being done consistent with constitutional law and consistent with the Charlottesville Police Department's own policy.
And so now that you've filed suit, what happens next? What's the timeline?
Well, these suits are supposed to take precedence over other cases. Now, again, it depends on the judge's docket, criminal cases, other civil cases. But in the first instance, the city will have to respond, and it is the burden under the law of the city to assert and explain and justify any exemption that they're going to claim for this refusal to provide these records. So, the police department, when they turned us down, when I filed the request with them directly, claimed that these were criminal investigative files. Now, that's where the issue will come out. I assume that they said what they believed, and I'm assuming that the city is going to respond by claiming that. However, the law seems pretty clear that, number one, files that are of cases that have long been closed are not subject to that exemption. And when I say exemption, it's exempt from mandatory disclosure. It can still give us the information. And secondly, that these records were never kept for criminal investigative purposes.
Right.
They were kept at the request of community members to determine whether officers on the street were complying with the law. And that is not a criminal investigative file. That is a file that's being kept in order to review the conduct of officers and their practices on the streets.
So how long does the city have to respond to you?
Well, I'd love to answer that question, but I'm not sure. The normal period for response is 21 days.
Uh-huh.
And the case should move fairly quickly thereafter. I'm hoping that now that the city, because we've been requesting these documents for some time, now that the city sees it in black and white and that the suit's been filed,
will
reconsider their position, look at the law that's cited in the petition, and will come to the table and discuss a settlement of the matter. But if not, of course, we're prepared to proceed. We think the laws and facts are on our side.
All right. Jeff Fogel, a local attorney representing the Public Housing Association of Residents and the Albemarle Charlottesville branch of the NAACP, to try and get some records from the Charlottesville Police Department on stop and frisk practices. Appreciate your time. Thanks very much for the insight. This is a WINA exclusive and an update on a story that we brought you not too long ago. Now, it was a request from the NAACP, the local chapter, and from attorney Jeffrey Fogel, who requested records in Charlottesville Circuit Court earlier this year about Charlottesville police stop and frisk records. So they were asking for these from the police department and from the city, and they had not gotten them. So they had filed a request in the circuit court, and Jeffrey Fogel talked with WINA News, and we have him here now, sound from Jeffrey Fogel. Give us the latest here on what's happened with this request.
The city of Charlottesville filed an answer in what's called a demurrer, which is really a motion to dismiss, claiming that it's obvious on the face of it that these documents are criminal investigative files. We, for our part, have maintained throughout this that these are not in criminal investigative files, and we think we can prove it, and we can do so with some of the testimony of the officials of the city police department. And so we have sought to take the deposition of the records officer and of the police chief, but the city does not want us to do that. And so they're trying to get a judge to dismiss the case without giving us an opportunity to get involved in discovery, that is to say, asking questions either in writing or orally.
And so what was the reasoning there?
Well, they simply said it's obvious that these are criminal investigative matters. Their theory is that since no officer is allowed to stop somebody without a reasonable possibility that the person is engaged in criminal activity, that that automatically makes it criminal investigative files. Well, of course, that begs the question. We don't know whether or not the officer actually has a basis for arresting somebody and is investigating a crime until we look at the very documents that they won't let us see. But I think throughout this, the most important question to ask is, these records, under any circumstances, are not required to be kept secret. And the question remains, as a matter of proper public policy and of the claim of transparency by the city in general and by the police department in particular, is there any reason for the citizenry not to be able to review whether police officers are following the law? That's all that's at issue here. We're not looking to find out anything about any individual. We're looking to see whether or not the city police officials are following the law. And for some reason, that's difficult for me to fathom, they don't want us to look at that question.
All right, so let's boil it down a little bit. Your request is to look at the procedure, not at the individual.
Precisely. Well, we've already agreed. Take out the name of the individual, take out the name of the officer, take out the name of any witnesses. Let's just see whether there's a valid basis for the stops that are going on in Charlottesville and for the particularly disproportionate number of stops of African-American men compared to everybody else. That's all we want to look at. And I don't know what the city's afraid of, except maybe it's going to reveal that they're not following the law. That's the only inference I can draw. But again, it's only an inference. I can't say it without seeing it.
Who ultimately might be holding up the works, coming up the works in this? Who ultimately has the say on whether to release this information or not?
Well, I don't know for sure, but I mean, there's only two possibilities here. And one is the police chief and the other is the city manager. And since the police chief works for the city manager, it has to fall in his lap. So there's no doubt in my mind this is a decision ultimately made by Maurice Jones, the city manager. He may have been recommended not to allow it by the police chief, but those are the only two people who would have any say in this matter.
In your talks locally with the NAACP President Rick Turner, what are his feelings and or opinions on this?
And I think, as he expressed at the time we filed this lawsuit, he's been very frustrated as well by the lack of precisely the lack of transparency in the face of the claim of transparency. Now, I don't think that he cares to blame whether it's Maurice Jones or Chief Longo. We're not in the blame game. We're into getting the information to see whether or not the police department is following the law and why so many African-American men are being stopped compared to others, and very little, if anything, is ever found. So why is our money being spent engaged in this activity, which is not particularly productive and which is undermining the trust and confidence of the police and the community that they claim to serve?
News Radio 1070 WINA News talked with Jeff Fogel, who is asking for city records on stop and frisk and not able to get them, at least at this point, and the city is fighting that in court. So, Mr. Fogel, what are the next steps?
I'm negotiating with the attorney for the city to come up with a date for a hearing in the circuit court so that we can begin to figure out dates for filing briefs on this subject, both on the question of whether or not this is automatically criminal investigative files, as the city claims, or whether or not it's not, and whether or not we're entitled to engage in some discovery, taking depositions or asking written questions of the people who've made these decisions.
All right, so ultimately this becomes a matter to be decided by a judge?
Well, clearly. I mean, when you go to court, you know that the decision's going to be made by the judge, either this judge or some appellate judge, if either side's not happy with what this judge says. So, you know, that's the forum that we've chosen. It's the only forum available. But we're going to have our opportunity to have our say in writing to the judge about why these materials should be released under FOIA.
And what court do you go to, and when will you have a date?
Well, the court is the Charlottesville Circuit Court, and so we know where we're going to be going. The date is in large part up to the judge and what the judge's schedule looks like, and we're in the process of discussing, in part, how much time do we each need to write briefs so that we can set a hearing at a realistic date. I don't think that it would extend beyond next month.
All right. Jeff Fogel, local attorney, thank you very much for being on. I appreciate your time today.
You're welcome.
All right. So if you'd like more information on this, you can see our exclusive story on WINA.com. You're listening to Charlottesville right now as we go beyond the headlines. Boy, there's a lot of stuff to get to today. We're going to talk about this shooting on WDBJ-TV. We've got that coming up. We also will have Jeff Fogel on the line. In the meantime, though, we have the city manager for the city of Charlottesville, Maurice Jones, on with us. And Maurice, we got a couple of things to talk about, a few, I guess. We've got new chief. I would love to get your thoughts on him, the Rivanna Solid Waste Authority. I think you were at that meeting yesterday. But I would like to start, since I talked about Jeff Fogel, what is the city's point of view with regard to this stop and frisk lawsuit that's going on now? It's Jeff Fogel working with the local NAACP and the Coalition of Public Housing Tenants who wants to examine the records of stop and frisk in the city of Charlottesville. Well, you guys had a, I guess it was a setback, if you will. Your motion to dismiss, the city's motion to dismiss was declined. What's your point of view on this?
Well, Les, traditionally we don't talk about lawsuits outside of the courtroom, and so I'm going to leave that to our attorneys to talk about the details of that and to address that within the courtroom at an appropriate time. So I really can't talk about all.
News Radio 1070 WINA. It's Charlottesville right now, where you go when you need to know. And we go beyond the headlines now, as a judge has refused to dismiss a lawsuit against the city of Charlottesville. This lawsuit deals with the police department and their stop and frisk records. Attorney Jeff Fogel, working with the NAACP and a coalition of public housing tenants, wants to examine the records of these stop and frisk incidents between June of 2012 and the same month last year. And with this dismissal, we turn to the experts, Jeff Fogel, who is the attorney. And so where do we stand right now?
Well, as you noticed, it was a motion by the city to dismiss the case without any further consideration. Yes, we were fully successful yesterday in overcoming that so-called hurdle. The judge overruled their motion to dismiss the case, and now we're going to proceed. I have just served a notice of depositions on the city to take the deposition of the records officer for the police department and of the chief. There may be a fight over that. They've indicated they don't want to be subject to a deposition, and they don't believe they have to be. Of course, I disagree, and we'll see what they do about that. If there's a deposition, that will precede a hearing in court. But the judge ruled that there will have to be an evidentiary hearing so that he can determine certain facts. The city maintained that it was obvious on the face of it, and if he looked at any one of the documents in question, he would recognize that the case couldn't go forward. The judge said, no, there are other issues besides what's on the piece of paper, why they were gathered, this information, why they're being maintained, and those things would have to be explored in an evidentiary hearing at which we would present witnesses, perhaps, and then certainly a legal argument. We don't have a date yet for that. We have to arrange that with the court. So where we stand is the motion to dismiss has been denied. I've served notice of depositions. There may or may not be a fight over whether we can take those depositions. And at some point in the not-too-distant future, I suspect sometime in September, we will have an evidentiary hearing for the judge to make a determination as to whether or not we should get the documents or not.
So these depositions, they are part of the evidentiary hearing?
Well, the depositions are typical in a civil case where you're allowed to take what we call them depositions. They're an in-person interview of a party with a court reporter there, as if we were in a courtroom but no judge. And we can there explore lots of issues, maybe not even all of them admissible during the trial, but you can go ahead and each side can discover what the other side will or will not say at the hearing. So we normally do that in anticipation of evidentiary hearings, and that's what I intend to do here.
1070 WINA, we're talking with Jeff Fogel about the stop and frisk policy of the city of Charlottesville. So the city is claiming, as I understand it, there's an exemption to the FOIA, the Freedom of Information Act, that lets them withhold criminal investigative files. Now, this ruling yesterday does not necessarily negate that. Is that correct?
That's correct. No, that exemption stands. And it is, I would admit, it's a quite a broad exemption as well. According to the Virginia Advisory Commission on FOIA, it may be the broadest exemption for police records in the entire country. But the fact that there's an exemption, as is pointed out by the Advisory Council, doesn't mean it should be withheld. The default should be to disclose, not to withhold, and to have a good reason whenever you're going to withhold that information. And, of course, in all the time that we've been trying to get these documents, we have never been given a good reason why the city wants to withhold them. In fact, we've been given no reason at all. Nobody has ever gotten a reason why the city wants to hold these documents back. Now, the law, as I said, is quite broad. It's exemption, but it doesn't cover, it's not as broad as the city would like it to be, because the city's position is essentially, we don't want to show the public anything we don't have to. Even as they go around saying, we are a city who believes in transparency and accountability, but when you try to make them transparent and you try to make them accountable, they immediately rush to protect themselves and put up a cover wall in order to prevent the public from seeing how the city is operating in some of its critical areas. This is a very hot issue. As everybody knows, when the police chief reported on it, 70% of the people being stopped and those being stopped and frisked were African American. And only about 10 or 11% of all stops resulted in any evidence of criminal activity. So a very serious question has been raised here merely by the statistics as to whether or not the city is engaging in extensive racial profiling when they stop people on the street. That's an issue, apparently, that they don't want to discuss, and they certainly don't want the public to be able to examine the records that would show either that it was true or not true, which leads one to the conclusion, geez, it really may be true.
1070 WINA, we're talking with Jeff Fogel about the stop and frisk policy of the city of Charlottesville. What would lead the officers to do the stop and frisk? Do they have to have some sort of a lead in this? I mean, has somebody has to say? Go ahead.
Well, the standard's been established since, I think, 1968 as to what the police officer must do before they can detain somebody on the street. And that is, and I apologize for the words, but those are the words, reasonable, articulable suspicion that the person is engaged in criminal activity. When they say articulable, it can't just be, I had a hunch. He looks suspicious. They have to be able to articulate facts which establish in anyone's mind a reasonable suspicion that the person is engaged in criminal activity. And that's what these narratives that we're seeking will reveal as to whether or not the police are following the law and why it is that so many disproportionately stops are of African Americans, even though there's no evidence that they find any more criminal activity on the stops they make of African Americans than the stops they make of Caucasian Americans.
News Radio 1070 WINA, it's Charlottesville right now, where you go when you need to know. And we go beyond the headlines now, as a judge has refused to dismiss a lawsuit against the city of Charlottesville. This lawsuit deals with the police department and their stop and frisk records. Attorney Jeff Fogel, working with the NAACP and a coalition of public housing tenants, wants to examine the records of these stop and frisk incidents between June of 2012 and the same month last year. I think if I read right in the newspaper that Chief Longo said that we're the only police station in the country that are keeping records like this. Does that help in any way?
Well, he didn't say that because it certainly isn't true. So it's not true. The other cities are also tracking this. What may be true is that no other municipality in Virginia is doing this yet, although I know a number of them are considering it. But having said that, the question is, why keep track of these records if there's not going to be any transparency or any accountability for the conduct of the police? And when you consider the fact that their desire to withhold it, and again, I should remind people that we have agreed to have these documents, take all names in the documents taken out. So we wouldn't even know who the police officer was, who the person being stopped was, and who the citizen, if anyone, may have given the police any information that they relied on. So we're not looking for names. We're not looking to violate anybody's privacy rights. We're looking to take a broad look at the conduct of the Charlottesville Police Department when it stops people on the street. Now, the chief said that he started this because, oh, we should be recording constitutional intrusions. He's absolutely right. But then the question is, what happens with that? Now he says, well, we're using those not for criminal investigative purposes, purposes, but for the purpose of supervision of our patrol officers, so that supervisors can see what patrol officers are doing and perhaps whether they're following the law. But if that's the case, and I believe it is, then they're not criminal investigative materials. They're simply supervisory reports in order for the supervisors to see the conduct of police officers, and they have nothing to do with the particular case that they allegedly are, you know, maybe looking into. So that's why we believe that the exemption, as broad as it is, doesn't apply in these circumstances.
If you get what you want out of this case, what do you hope the outcome is?
Well, it's very simple, that we'll get a copy of each, I think they're called incident reports, that officers are required to write after they have detained somebody on the street that does not result in an arrest or a prosecution. And with those narratives, we'll be able to examine whether or not they have a consistent pattern of not following the law, of not having reasonable, articulable suspicion. And we may also be able to find out, I think we will, whether or not there's a pattern of racial profiling here.
1070 WINA, we're talking with Jeff Fogel about the stop and frisk policy of the city of Charlottesville. If there is a pattern, and if they don't have that articulable suspicion, then what happens? Would there be individual lawsuits? Would there be a policy change at the police? All of the above?
Well, it depends on the extent to which that's happening. For example, in New York, there was a class action lawsuit. Now, the question would be here whether or not there are enough instances of illegal conduct by the police that would warrant a class action. Otherwise, certainly with respect to those people who were the victims of unconstitutional conduct by the police, they would be all entitled to bring individual suits. Now, of course, the problem that people may face is that some of these documents go back more than 2 years, and there is a statute of limitations, meaning there's a time period within which you must file a lawsuit, and that's 2 years. So there would be some people who might have been improperly detained on the street more than 2 years ago who would not be able to file such a lawsuit. But again, my position has always been the city, when it knows that it has violated the constitutional rights of its citizens, it should tell its citizens that, and it should offer them some compensation, or at least give them the opportunity to seek the kind of compensation that the law provides for that kind of illegal activity. And the city clearly doesn't want to do that. Now, that suggests the city doesn't care about the Constitution, doesn't care about the constitutional rights of its citizens, and certainly doesn't want to be liable for any misconduct on the part of its employees.
Well, and that ends up being a taxpayer issue, I think, yes?
Well, I mean, they may say it's a taxpayer issue, but it's also an issue of whether or not this is a constitutional government or a tyranny.
What's the old adage? Sunlight is the best disinfectant, so bring it out, right?
Yes, and that's what. And if you listen to any of the politicians in the city, if you listen to the police chief, he goes around talking about, well, the main thing we're going to do is we're going to be involved in transparency and accountability. And then when you confront him with something like this, well, be transparent about this and let's have some accountability. Oh, no, not about that. Well, what are you going to be transparent and accountable about? Whatever they feel like, but not what is really necessary in order to examine their actual conduct. And the problem for the police department, and I don't know why they don't realize it, is this is driving yet a further wedge between the community and the police department. As the police department claims it's seeking to have better relations with the community, at the same time it's engaged in this kind of activity, which actually destroys whatever trust they may be trying to build in other ways.
1070 WINA, we're talking with Jeff Fogel about the stop and frisk policy of the city of Charlottesville. Is it better, do you think, to plead for forgiveness in this instance, if indeed that is the case, that there was some racial profiling going on, and say, look, yeah, we messed up, we've made changes in the department, and this is how we're going to handle it?
That would be great.
Yeah.
That would be great. That's the way it should be. I don't know why public officials are afraid to say they made a mistake or there was some illegal conduct in their office and we're going to do something about it. But, you know, we've seen other examples of that here as well. I mean, even when, you know, there was an improper use of cell phones after people have left office, the city didn't want it, sought to cover that up. Now, I don't get it, because they undermine their own trust in the public. And in the long run, they're better off with, as you said, the light of sun than the darkness of night in terms of what they're doing.
Well, it certainly is interesting. So the next step is you get to find out whether you can depose the,
right, exactly,
the police chief. So it really is just a waiting game, and you think that'll happen sometime in September.
Yes, yes. Yeah, I think that, you know, the case is going to move ahead fairly quickly. I mean, I know the judge is busy, but he said, you know, we're supposed to check in with the court and we'll try to pick a date where we have a few hours that we can have an evidentiary hearing. So we're going to move ahead as quickly as we can, and I know the city is going to try to stop us. So we've got some fights ahead.
All right. Well, Attorney Jeff Fogel, who is working with the NAACP, the local chapter, and the Coalition of Public Housing Tenants, wants to examine the records of stop and frisk in the city of Charlottesville. We appreciate your time. Thank you very much.
You're quite welcome.